Hey guys, Randy and Jason Sklar here along with
Daniel Van Kirk.
And our guests,
Natasha Leggera
and Moshe Kasher,
are so good on this show. We talk about budding rap artists at McDonald's.
Making sketty.
And we talk, and we really get to the core, and Natasha Leggera really helps us get to the core. Is it nunchucks or nunchucks?
Numb.
It depends on where you're from.
But get out here and fight. That's all I got to say. Listen to the episode, Dumb People Town, this week.
It's the Starburns Industries Tape of the Month Club. 12 original cassette tapes delivered to your door. Each month, you'll receive a crisp new cassette tape of auditory delights made by some of the most funky and creative artists around. Featuring Dino Stamatopoulos, Natalie Palamides, Johnny Pemberton, Dan Harmon, future Ladies of Wrestling, Alan Resnick and Dina Kelberman, Dynasty Handbag, Jeff B. Davis, Rob Schraub, Lance Bangs, DJ Doug Pound, Kron, Open Mike Eagle, Ron Lynch, and on and on and on. Subscribe now. $13 gets you a crisp, unique tape in the mail each month. For $20, you receive a portable cassette player so you can listen to your tapes on the go. Here's how to order. For credit card customers, please call 747-888-0945. That's 747-888-0945. Or save COD charges and log onto the World Wide Web at d.rip/SBI-PRESS. It's a good deal.
Feral Audio.
What up, pound puppies? What up, pound pimples? Hello, friends.
So,
this song you're listening to is called The Hermit Crab by one of my absolute favorite bands called Lilies. Today on the Poundcast is Kurt Heasley, the mastermind behind the music of Lilies.
No way.
And if you're not familiar with Lilies, I highly recommend you check them out. This is music that has dug itself deep
into my soul
over the years. And this episode may not be for everyone, but this one is for me.
Me.
And this one is for the true heads out there.
The true heads out there.
And shout out to Ben Jacobs, a.k.a. Max Tundra, for introducing me to Kurt and making this episode happen.
Sup, Max?
Kurt has an amazing mind, and this episode can be a little trippy sometimes to follow along with, but I was thinking, should I edit it? And you know what? I'm not going to edit it. Just going to let it fly.
Let it fly.
What else? Oh, yeah. I'm going back to Australia in May.
I'll be there.
And I'll be doing a solo show Saturday the 13th of May at the Factory Theater in Sydney.
Wicked.
Monday the 15th of May, I'll be opening for Eric Andre at the Comedy Theater in Melbourne.
Yes.
Tuesday the 16th of May, Comedy Theater, Melbourne.
Brilliant.
Wednesday the 17th of May, Eaton's Hill Hotel, Brisbane.
Nice.
Maybe more shows will be added. I hope so.
I hope so.
I'm trying.
Okay.
Also, I'm going to be in Austin at the Moon Tower Comedy Festival.
Austin, Texas.
April 19th through 22. I think I'm doing one show every night, so hope you can make it.
Okay.
One last thing, Poundcast t-shirts are available. They are now only $15, and shipping is free. I think I sold out of XL. Sorry if you're an XL size. But you can't beat that price anywhere. And it's a perfect way to support the Poundcast. Another way to simply support the Poundcast is by clicking on the Amazon link at Feral Audio before you buy anything on Amazon. Doesn't cost you a cent. Just click on the Amazon link at thepoundcast.com or feralaudio.com. before you buy stuff. Okay, my pound puppies and my pound pimples.
Okay.
Let's get deep with Kurt Heasley and Brent Weinbach.
Yes.
Live action.
There we go.
The generator. Putting out the higher mind.
Wow.
There's the operator. To be ready for the human.
All right.
This is really good music.
The great, thank you. That's a great, as far as the division of labor after, you know, 10 years of learning to listen to others and in, you know, critical production series of, you know, binary choices. Do I play this, play that. Pause there. I was not a natural communicator. I was good with learning and singing, but not expressing my thoughts and feelings or trying to work with others to make anything, you know, the actual, you know, collaboration or.
Well, that's going to change today because
this
is the Poundcast.
This is the Poundcast.
And today I'm your guest, DJ Doug Pound. My co-guest over here is Brent Weinbach.
Ooh.
Today I'm honored to have Kurt Heasley as the host.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Poundcast.
We just heard some of his music.
Yeah, that's right. That was The Generator by Lilies, which
Lilies.
Now, Lilies basically is you, right?
Lilies is basically me extending what I learned as a teenager, as a music lover, and as a lover of the individual men and women who would choose to make these ideas, which are like, you know, living sculpture in many ways, like children, you know, they take on a life of their own and they don't exist in this static place of the baby is born. I guess we can go back to work. It's actually this living thing. And, you know, song to song, record to record, lineup to lineup. Yeah, it was interesting that I was the last person standing. And by the time the first album came out and I had felt that the original community that I said, that was that, was over, I was given the advice by my friend, who I also worked with, who I was also a roommate of, who had graduated from Franklin and Marshall Business School.
He said,
This is a brand, baby.
Oh, and so you keep your brand.
And my Bill Hicks said, yeah, baby. Well, then tell me how to cash in.
Your Bill Hicks said that to you.
My inner Bill Hicks bullshit dar really quickly said, did you just call this idea a brand? The undoing process, the surrender is a brand. Okay, let's see where this goes.
So you kept the name Lilies, even though your band broke up, and you called the next album Lilies as well.
Lilies.
Were your first bandmates upset? They were like, wait a second, Lilies was all of us. Lilies isn't just you.
I don't know.
You were the leader.
I think because so much of it was nonverbal language, that what we were doing and what motivated us at first was a personal friendship, that there was recordings and writings that, you know, were journal entries being turned into verses and choruses, and that the other friends in Richmond, Virginia, that I had been playing with the year before, because there was this sort of clockwork, you know, REM, Sonic Youth, like vision. It's both kind of world and a little bit apocalyptic in that Death in June, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds sort of way, that for someone to just let go of, you know, the the topography of the dream, and someone just starts sticking all of these inappropriate parts to me. And this is where I think communication first proved an obstacle for me working with others, because I couldn't actually put into words, but boy, oh boy, could I make a face when someone would start in on, oh, maybe I'll play something like this. And the muscles, it would literally look like Senkaijuku dance.
So are you talking like, your mouth so would just make a frown face when someone did that?
Whole body. Is there a German word for whole body frown? Because that's basically, yeah, my.
This is not going to translate for the listeners, but can you give, is it possible to show us Doug and me an example of a body or a face that you would express when you didn't like something?
Well, here, how about I attempt to use my words, since this has been the decade of me using my words. You know, 2010, it was like, man, I don't know if I can just sit here and listen to this anymore.
Wait, prior to 2010, did you not use a lot of words?
No, I would just body.
You sing a lot of words, though.
Just body.
I would sing a lot of words. Yeah, that was how I learned.
You were good at that.
Thank you.
Definitely good at that.
You know what? I kept much better company than I was able to be by myself. And, you know, that being a directive, if you are understanding what the right thing to do is and you're keeping bad company just because you don't want to be alone, that's you're running from. And I was not. I was running from bad design. I was running from a Washington, D.C. that had been overrun with people who were convinced that 2 and 2 was 5 and that...
Trump?
I wouldn't call Reagan Trump, but it wasn't even Ronald Reagan.
You're talking about your friend, your people you were hanging out with.
Yeah. I was talking about my high school friends.
I'm still interested in what a full body...
A full body frown. Okay.
Can you describe it?
So with
shoulders slumped.
Yeah. So with the opening of the mouth, you make as big an O as you can, while trying to get as much of your heart and intestines away from them. Like,
wow.
While somehow kind of keeping eye contact, just enough to be like, no.
So that's how you got your music so good, is by not saying anything, but like when they play something wrong, you just make a face that they alter it until it's right.
And so
what's an example of something that someone would play that would make your body contort like that?
How does one describe great design if one has an aversion to terrible design?
Mies van der Rohe.
Okay.
That's good design.
That's, yeah, I was going to say.
And terrible design is what?
No. I want to hear. Well, I already know what I think.
I guess here what I'm getting at is, okay, say you have a song and then there's a bass
player. I want to know what you think terrible design is, if you think Mies van der Rohe is good design.
Okay, have you ever been to the campus of Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia?
No, absolutely.
I would go and do a virtual tour.
Okay.
Have you ever seen that, they have like the $2 a brick bricks at Home Depot, which aren't really great bricks, but they're like then they have like these $1.25 a brick bricks, and then they have the 99-cent. You're not even sure what the color of this brick is, but it's this brick color. Well, imagine building the Jesse Helms School of Law and Government in Lynchburg, Virginia for Liberty University using pretty exclusively that color brick and white plastic columns. It is as intimidatingly, it's like they brought a little bit of Florida, my home state, you know, that 80s, 90s, you know, it was that kind of first.
It's got that Parrot Jungle kind of vibe.
Yeah, it's the darkness. It's the accepting there's nothing you can do. Why fight it? You know, red pills are pills too. Might as well, you know, you're going to have to do something today. You might as well.
When someone wanted to introduce a bass line to you, would something like, say, for example, a Seinfeld style bass, would that make your body go the wrong way?
You know, that's interesting, because there is a lot of, not Seinfeld, but other types of bass. Like, have you ever heard the song Pulling Punches by David Sylvian, his first solo record, The Brilliant Trees, after his band Japan stopped playing together? Okay, so Japan, the singer is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And his trajectory after Japan.
We're going to listen to it. But keep continuing.
Pulling Punches. David Sylvian.
Oh, yeah. Wait, that would put you off?
No.
Oh, this is what
I would already be in the center of the dance floor, but now I would start to open up in that crazy Yellow Magic Orchestra. Ryuichi Sakimoto in the house! Jungle Brothers!
I mean, your body's smiling right now as we listen to this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he looks a lot like David Bowie, huh? Okay, can we back up a little bit?
I like this a lot, actually.
Okay. And we're listening to it on headphones. Mm-hmm. Let's actually go and pull out one of my, you know, UK printings of this record. And you can understand why that group of people...
Do you have several UK printings of this?
Two.
You do?
First.
Do you have like a massive record collection?
No.
Just these two records and that's it.
That's it.
That's all you need.
That's all you need.
A couple David Sylvians.
And then
UK prints.
No, I have a series of records that I keep on buying. And since I left DC in 1992, where my first round of, I don't know what I'm going to do with this Greek test pressing of Hatful of Hollow that Johnny Marr and Morrissey signed on my 16th birthday. I guess I'll just leave it with a friend. And, you know, all of
this. But you kept some records.
I keep on buying records because they're records.
So you were a new wave guy in the 80s.
I was a, if you can imagine that Neil Diamond, Goffin, King, Monkees enthusiast. I collected all of the, you know, screen gems.
Do you by any chance know who Bart Davenport is, by any chance?
My friend Bart Davenport, yeah.
Okay, I don't know. Some of your music kind of reminds, kind of,
he and I have been entwined for decades.
Okay.
And,
wait a second. I want to ask, what records are the tiny stack that you kept? If you're gonna leave a signed copy of the Smiths record with your friends, what do you take with you when you leave Washington D.C.?
I didn't actually. I took nothing. I took a bag. And
oh, okay.
I literally.
What? Okay. Well,
I parted out musical. You know, the instruments, the back line from Lily's. I put my, you know, white, three pickup. Fender Bullet with the Stratocaster neck on in his case, and I had packed basically.
It has a whammy bar?
It actually has a modified tailpiece. Yeah, that was a whammy bar. Yeah.
Well, the question I was getting at was what is your, like, you know, your desert island collection?
Of whammy bars?
Of records.
of whammy bars.
I was like, are you really going? Like,
I'm not going there.
In 1958, Bigsby arm was... I'm trying to
zoom out a little bit.
Desert Island. I would... Well, because I get to spend a lot of time alone and not being judged for what I was listening to, I'd probably have some morning music like... Hats by Blue Nile, which is just too masculine and virile for any. I have yet to meet a young woman who would be like, oh, Kurt, what is this? I think when I played it last year, my wife said, who are you listening to? And I said, oh, this is the Blue Nile, Leela.
Your wife's name is Leela?
My wife's name is Leela Heasley. Yes.
Do you think, since her name is sort of like Lily's, like you're kind of attracted to her because of the connection there? Like kind of a vibe?
Yeah.
I told her that the day we met. You know.
So here's Hats by the Blue Nile. This is I'm going to have to get this for next time. Can you sing along a little bit?
He's lip singing right now.
I know. I want him to just, yes, I want to get a little,
oh wow,
little karaoke.
Like I said, this
I
is
can,
the,
I'll try.
This is the first, the
All right, we put you on the spot there. You don't have to do that.
I mean, the lip syncing was good enough for me. I know.
There's so many visual things going on here. I wish the listeners could see Kurt.
Can we describe Kurt for the listeners just right now? Just Kurt is a pretty tall man.
Six three quarters.
6 3/4. He's wearing a red shirt. What are those collars called again?
Like a collarless shirt?
There's a name for it.
It's a Nehru.
Nehru.
Oh, it's a Nehru.
But this
never heard that word before.
And
Nehru collar.
Where do you get it?
J. Peterman.
Where's that?
It's a catalog.
Isn't that
from
the guy
Seinfeld? Is this a joke?
No.
I don't know if you were talking about the Seinfeld baseline to make me talk about all the slap bass.
No,
that
is J. Peterman a real shirt company?
It's a. I,
okay,
it's
I'm sorry. Okay. We went off track.
So
here.
He's wearing a red Nehru shirt. And blue overalls, or just denim overalls.
Yes.
And very tall, and I'd say chin-length hair, fairly straight, apart on the sort of on his right side of his head, top of his head, and extended fingers, one grabbing, one straight, and
I was saying
thumbs extended.
I had filed my nails.
Filed nails.
I was doing some guitar exercises, which I keep on remembering. Oh, I love playing guitar. And if I don't have the ability to do it a few hours a day, or if a couple of weeks go by and I haven't done it for a few hours a day, it's like day one.
Really?
It's terrifying. Like my body just says...
It atrophies a little bit.
Guitar. It forgets. It's not that it atrophies. It just says, oh, this thing is great. We got to get one.
So let's start. Let's go back to the beginning. You're from Florida.
I was born in Florida. And
whereabouts?
At that time, we were...
Get this Blue Nile going back. That's nice.
West Palm Beach. My sister... Cocoa Beach,
okay,
West
okay,
Palm
okay.
Beach,
and then
when I was about 2.5, my dad, after the moonshot, went to Bell Labs, and we were in Hopatcong, New Jersey, as he went over the GW 5 days a week and 5 nights back.
So your dad's an astronaut man?
Spaceman.
He's a spaceman.
He's an engineer. Yeah, he's an engineer. And
Spaceman.
That's cool.
You
know?
Yeah, like if you like looking at things in the sky, and if you like things like kind of moving close to each other but not crashing in, or the exact opposite is weaponizing that technology and then making what you want to crash into what you want to crash meet. And, you know, it could be a really good thing. It could be a really bad thing. Most times you get on a plane and it takes off and it gets where it's going and it lands, mostly by wire, meaning
there's a disconnect between control and the... Is that what you mean by wire?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so you're from Florida.
From Florida.
And then you went up to the D.C. area.
Yeah.
Then you started Lily's, like, in high school?
Well, no, actually, I started writing and recording half of the stuff that would become Lily's, 15. And then the year I left, I had just turned 16.
You left D.C. at 16?
No, I left high school at 16. And unlike my father, I didn't graduate and then start university. It was more like, oh, you've discovered I was not here 42 of the last 123 days. You're going to expel me for that, aren't you?
Oh, so why weren't you in school?
I was working on music, and, you know, what does one without, I had
chasing girls. No.
I did not realize one, because of my height. I was about 6'3". I did not realize how many, you know,
how big of a hunk you were.
or no, how many
punks like would want to be like you?
Super, well, super intelligent, super attractive women that were our foils, because there was this sense of shared purpose. We were all just looking at the map. It was hard to look at each other. And, or maybe I was just, you know, I'd get out of bed like screaming, like, you know, it's like snake handling. It was like trance channeling, you know, because there was so much, you know, between You're Living All Over Me by Dinosaur Jr. coming out. And
that's a great record.
And I mean, can you? And so, and if you can imagine, you know, a mantra of, you know, Furry Little Critters, and then the Jesus and Mary Chain show up with a drum machine with Opal opening up. And so you have to watch Kendra Smith perform a song like Magic Powers. And if you're not familiar with the band Opal or her previous band.
What's a good song by Opal?
Magic Powers with a K, I do believe. They like to...
CK, actually.
It, well, CK, yes.
So you are correct.
With an additional K.
Magic CK.
Yeah.
Magic CK. And... I apparently...
So this is why you missed school for 40 days.
I did.
This kind of stuff.
I did. This was my... This is my
This
reason.
Will do it.
Who were you hanging out with?
Smart people.
Who were your people? Were they mods?
Mark Anderson, Positive Force House, a lot of Discord shows, Ian Spazonius, who would start the Nation of Ulysses, and
the makeup,
of course. He was just here Monday, speaking downtown, doing the escapism, I do believe.
This is cool.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Are you into the 60s?
Not as... There are a diverse group of recordings from both 60s classical, theatrical live, early electronic 20th century classical. Raymond Scott, Morton Subotnik. I know all the, well, and this is all, and these were all, you know, into Terry Riley, Rainbow with Curved Hair. And this was all setting a tone that by the time Switched On Bach, and then, of course, by the time I was on the scene, the Clockwork Orange soundtrack, we have to remember Wendy Carlos was not only a composer, a performer.
Formerly Walter Carlos.
An engineer. Well, you know, and it's interesting, you know, we arrive at the point in life where it's almost like there's that band, the Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs. Like, I feel the singer must have got off a bus in New York from wherever the hell she's from and just, you know, said, whatever that was is over. I am now Karen O. Because watching them, like, my kids love Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs. And, I mean, I get it. I mean, I totally, like, yeah, this is awesome. Same with the New Pornographers. Like, why am I not?
I feel like she kind of...
Listening to more cool new music, because there I was listening to Opal records, you know, making records. I would go, I mean, covering myself with, you know, basically this, you know, hamster shroud of all of these talent, you know, like map upon map upon map. Like I existed a lot in the past up until about 35. And I have been for the last 10 years kind of apologizing, kind of letting go, attempting to communicate with words.
What's your favorite decade? 60s or 80s?
Oh, wow.
Those are the two options.
I was going to say, that's really weird.
Got to go 80s.
The last decade of the 19th century, obviously, was all the real fun stuff.
Last decade of the, did you say 19th century?
1890 to 1891.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
You liked Impressionism. You were into...
I was, and you know, if you have ever seen any of my, like, real clothing choices, I have a love of that Edwardian crap. Like, I would, if I had the hands to make people little things. Like, if you've ever seen Hillary Clinton's desire for handcraft, like, you know, these like $50,000 jackets. I'm like, if it was a good person that I really loved, I would just make them one. They're like, you've been doing that jacket for 2 years. And I was like, and it's almost.
Wait a second. So you like that era because of the fashion?
No, because of why they were meditating, doing, they were learning about the world and how things worked. And this is like the pre, like, maxim of efficiency. Heinrich
Ford. Someone might walk out from back there, so don't be alarmed. Don't be alarmed. Okay.
This place is under surveillance.
I could have told you.
Do you like impressionistic music?
Yes. And this is where all this non-linear thought, you know, or, you know, kind of the deconstructed formula, because there is, you know, when people talk about, you know, orders of mathematical consistency and, you know, what we are looking at when we are seeing fractals, you know, what we see when we rub our eyes, and that pattern of grayscale, you know, starts to, oh, there it was. I didn't even rub my eyes. I just told myself to, you know, name the shapes. And that's, you know, one of the things is, rather than trying to tell a story about what I had a dream about, I would mechanically try to describe dreams or dream worlds. Hypnotography.
So do you like Eric Satie?
I love Satie, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's our, you know, one of our...
Debussy, of course, you probably must
course.
Love. You know,
and this right? is all... And, you know, if you were looking at a common theme in the community from... Yeah, from the time I was 18 till now. Yeah, we're all about making such a complete inventory of the existing rules and having such a, like, a thorough acceptance of, well, this is the way things are. And then with that acceptance, go and work on the exact opposite. It's not that you're attempting to just go on this psychotic break of, I'm reinventing the wheel. And then, like, 20 years later, you come back with a little wheel, like, look what I did. I learned it myself, rather than taking sort of the...
Is that... So, your first album...
In the Presence of Nothing.
In the Presence of Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Are you the only one playing
A lot it? Of people, you know, oh. say...
Did you just say, am I the only one playing on it?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna really point it out. You can call Lilies. Lilies is a series of... 73 micro agreements over 27 years.
So 73 different players.
So between the lineups from the first 7-inch to the second record, from the third album to the beginning of the fifth record, I with attempting to work with people as they are, not as I wished they would be, and I think this caused a lot of hurt feelings, because I could not say, I want to tell you what to do, but if I have to tell you how to do it, I mean, not just, like, I've always been able to beatbox and, you know, give parts, you know.
Kind of like someone, a line read.
And someone, exactly, mm-hmm. And when someone nails it, I shut up. Mm-hmm. And let them take over.
Do you do a full body smile?
I do. Sometimes a little Merce Cunningham. The ocean of forever is coming through us.
Actually, I have a question. I know you have a question. I had a question.
Well, okay. What I was getting at with you to circle. Okay, go ahead.
Just real quick. This is because it's related to that. Did you, when someone started playing something that you really liked, did mm-hmm. you start kind of dancing around to it the way you were when we were listening to some of these tracks?
I would usually be like, I'd be playing either guitar
okay,
or
you're
bass.
Playing with it.
And
okay.
What would happen is, if, you know, when you listen to In the Presence of Nothing, the Harold and I really were able to, with Kenny Heitmuller, the engineer, like on this, you know, little basement carpeted, you know, it was his parent, Kenny Heitmuller's parents' house. So we're in the Heitmuller's house, but, you know, I'm on LSD 25. I'm 20 years old. I am making basically the farewell album of a band that never got a chance to record all of these songs. That, I mean, I look at film footage between 1990, fall of 1990, and the spring of 1992. And I forgot, we would just be playing. And like, there were songs I don't remember. Like, we were just making that sound. That's who we were. And if someone left for whatever reason, usually to do something better and more interesting. And it's not like I felt, how could you leave me? But I just understood, like, some of the greatest, most intense relationships are finite.
So I wanted to circle back when you said, talking about reinventing the wheel, you would just go learn how to make a wheel and bring it back. So the first album, In the Presence of Nothing, is a lot like My Bloody Valentine in the style.
So
stylistically.
Exactly.
So it's like you were like inspired by that sound and you made that wheel.
Worked in that language. Yeah.
You made I don't think it's like a My Bloody Valentine ripoff at all. I think it's like you did
it's more like a Yola Tango ripoff of sorts, right?
It's like you made your own wheel of that.
Because, you know, it's hard to describe to kids who aren't familiar with the Byrds, you know, who aren't familiar with Jimi Hendrix, who aren't familiar with X and Husker Du and Sonic Youth, why isn't anything by My Bloody Valentine, which is both extremely punk rock and as Prince. And it encompasses 1,800 variables into a sound, and I swear I could hear the level of connectivity. Isn't anything by My Bloody Valentine made multiple generations. It went back to Satie.
You just made me realize.
And
it's and one of the songs.
It's a My Bloody Valentine song.
It's a pretty good joke.
And it does.
When did In the Presence of Nothing come out? 92?
Yeah, I guess in the fall of 1992.
And then Loveless came out in
the year before.
The year before. See, you must have been doing.
Well,
like, it's not like you heard that record and said,
"Oh, absolutely." I wasn't going to go and get I had already been working on samplers and drum machines, and I was just learning how to play with people. I didn't want to go back and sequence rhythm tracks to make this epic. I mean, we made In the Presence of Nothing in 4.5 days. I think another 2 days were spent mixing it. And the level of trust in that the first impression was probably as good as the 800th take, that what we were working on was broad strokes all over this picture, which, yeah, if you knew what part of that Dinosaur Jr. song we were feeling on, or if you knew what New Order song that pocket was meant to breathe like, and we all did. It's not like it was, we must sound just like My Bloody Valentine. No, we have
My point is to all the haters.
And there are.
It's its own sound unto itself. It's not like, I don't think, you know, it's a ripoff of anything. I think it's incredible.
I mean,
it's just music.
It's just
rock and roll. That's all it is.
Yeah, exactly. It is the least not rock and roll record. It is really super. I always get reminded by the people that had this sense of like, yeah, I hear what you're doing. You're feeling, you know, it's the same way. A lot of bands in the 60s.
I felt the same thing
would
about.
Would shift.
Yeah.
They're like, you can only put so much sound and character in front of a microphone before, you know, if you need innovation rather than mastery, you're sort of out of luck. You know, you have to be able to just, these are the best things I know. This is the best way I know how to get this idea across. And yeah, I loved that people were excited and really just, I mean, for every reason, feeling on Loveless. But I was excited for the other 1,799 things I heard. I was like, okay, you know, Kevin Shields has that covered. I'll go here and focus on my...
I mean, this is a revelation for me because I always thought My Bloody Valentine was a Lily's ripoff.
Well, there's no...
Here, listen to this.
There's no... There's no H.G. Wells production time machine where I was going back to 87... No. Okay. That would have been horrible.
Okay.
So, I would have hated to have done music competitively at 16. That really would have... I was pretty broken by, you know, 23. I don't think earlier.
So Bill Clinton becomes the president of the United States and you decide to take off.
Oh, you...
From D.C., right?
So
why did you leave?
And where did you go?
I think the phrase, you know, people... in 2000 really complained about the culture that came in around the W. Bush. And I understand what they meant.
Fugazi's playing shows. Are you going to Fugazi shows?
Of course. And yeah, I mean,
you hanging out with Ian McKay?
Yeah. They were the people.
HR? Do you know HR?
Yeah.
Ian McCullough. Yeah.
Ian McCulloch.
You're hanging out with...
Ian McCullough. Is that the singer from The Echo and the Bunnymen?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
If there's a...
You like Echo and the Bunnymen?
I think they're great in like that sort of doorsy... They're awesome. And I spent a lot...
I like the Bunnymen.
Like R.E.M., the first songs that I'm learning to play are R.E.M. songs, New Order songs.
Oh, you love
Joy
R.E.M.
Division songs. And, oh, yeah.
Did you like R.E.M. because they sounded so un-80s, in the 80s?
They probably sounded more... They had more joy in them, like my first favorite contemporary bands, which was Kraftwerk and Devo. And so I was a young lad, like when I heard Tour de France by Kraftwerk, I pretty much said, okay, this is where it's at.
You're like, I gotta get a bike.
It tied into identity. And you know, these are, you know, when someone said Lily's, it's a brand. You're a brand now, man. And I thought at the first record, I had completed, you know, that product run. I was like, oh, great. What's next? And they're like, no, man, people know what it is now. I'm like, but it wasn't even real.
Do you think it confuses people when you do a stylistic shift and it's like, wait a second, the Lilies, I thought that was shoegaze music and now it's
that's out of my purview, man. I don't have that kind. I almost made it through the 10th grade and I was so busy trying to get all the nuts and bolts of how the world works and how music is written, recorded and performed live. These were huge. And I mean,
does your dad like your music or did he, or I don't know if he,
oh,
I don't know
if you know, he has, over the last 10 years, really expressed an appreciation for how I resonate while making music and what people are hearing when they hear, when the people who enjoy this expression, you know, it's not like a one size fits all sound. And in fact, I am probably like a lot of self-taught art brute. It's so hyper-specialized that it did for me become a bit fetishized with, you know, genre and labels and lineage and influence. And I can listen to music and I can talk about parts of music, but attempting to name that baby, like, what is it? I lose a little steam, you know. If someone's like, hey, what is this? And you're telling them about all the components and influences and the waves. It's just like, so My Bloody Valentine was not influenced by Lily's. I'm like, yes, because in the 80s, when My Bloody Valentine were ripping it hard, they were doing it balls out. Well, Deb, Belinda. and then, you know, the first Lily 7-inch in the 90s came out.
Well, okay, that whether or not your dad liked it I think
he has expressed approval and an appreciation for the perseverance, knowing it is a dark and nearly hopeless hall of mirrors to reside with an authentic relationship with yourself and actually make things that are somehow commercially.
I can relate to the, trying to describe it to, because it's the same thing with like, you know, me and Brent do comedy and it's like, people are like, oh, what do you, you know, like describe your comedy. That's like,
I mean, I can describe it. I can describe
the influences. We were talking about the music, the Desert Island Discs. Well, you know, okay, so you have Morning Music. You got the
Hats,
Blue Nile. You got Spirit of Eden, Talk, and then you start getting
Four Non Blondes. What's going on?
Okay, is that funny? Because that's not funny. She's a very well-respected Bay Area songwriter, producer.
Yeah, watch your mouth, Brent.
Linda Perry.
We got Everclear on there, probably.
And
Sum 41.
You got the new Bad Religion country album. That's just got into the top slot.
You know, you've got, you know, Debbie Gibson in the Waves.
Yeah. We got the Bunny
Man.
There's a special place
in my heart for Debbie Gibson. For being Bill Hicks worthy. That Debbie Gibson and Tiffany were both able to be so culturally relevant for their 15 seconds that they made it into Bill Hicks. Because you had to really be, you know, a fly in the ointment to get on Bill's radar at that point. And so, and I understand, you know, and why New Order, why Echo and the Bunnymen, why Sonic Youth, why Coil? That's the other half, is there's an electronic composition starting with, you know, from Satie to, you know, Concrete to Switched On Bach to Kraftwerk to
Passport.
Passport, school me.
Oh, I
60s, 70s, 80s?
I think it's...
And I'm learning more every day. Like, I don't have such a hyper-specialized knowledge that... You know.
Synergy. How about Synergy? Larry Fast?
You know, Larry? He's probably talking about some smooth jazz.
It's not smooth jazz.
No. Have you ever heard Band 87, Mark Isham's group from...
Mark Isham, yeah.
Mark Isham, yeah. Who was playing...
Men Before the Mirrors.
Trumpet with David Sylvian in 1988 on the Secrets of the Beehive tour, which, I mean...
Do Mark Isham, Men Before the Mirror, or Men Before Mirrors, or something like that. Men Before the Mirror, I think.
How do you spell Isham?
I-S-H-A-M. So this is a classic right here, this track.
Hold on.
I think...
It's not coming up.
What was the other...
I got it. What were we talking about? Every time I think of something amazing to ask you.
You asked me if my dad is still alive.
No, he did. Well, you should have said, he's still around, but he used to like the music.
Well, I wasn't sure if he's around, you know, if he's around. He sounds like he is.
Hey, there's some penis on this album cover.
Well, it's Men Before the Mirror.
And he's looking at his dick in the mirror.
Oh, thank God. Oh, that's a great cover.
This is a classic track right here. But Synergy, I would think in that vein, Larry Fast, who was the synthesizer player for Peter Gabriel, and his solo thing was called Synergy. And, in this vein, kind of, well, no, not quite, but electronic realizations for rock orchestra. That's you right there.
Exactly.
If you had to pick one Sonic Youth record to take with you.
Yeah.
Which one would it be?
Yeah, it would be Sister.
Nice.
I sometimes would have to think of a world without star power from Evol, but I couldn't explain Sonic Youth without Schizophrenia. And that's the opener. That's how they
That's the one that I started, that first one I listened to, because it was on a skate video.
Oh, really? I got that first album when it was the first album, and I said, what the hell is this? And then the other side of the cassette was backwards, and I was like, oh,
really?
I see what's going on here.
Oh, this is cool, Brent. This is,
You know this track.
Yeah, I now know what you're talking about. Yeah, I grew up with Kitaro, Silk Road, and Music for Airports. Thanks, Mom.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
She did leave the body like 10 years ago. Uh-huh, 11.
Uh-huh. Wait, your mom introduced you to Brian Eno?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah. Okay. Dude, it was the 70s.
Okay.
What was your mom listening to? My mom was still listening to Ballad of the Green Berets 10 years later.
My mom
never
was,
let
my mom
it go.
Listening to Oldie Station. My mom Dick was Biondi in Chicago.
My mom was listening to Shostakovich.
Ooh.
International Mother's Day. I mean, Women's Day.
Oh, today?
Yeah.
Is it?
It's also my birthday.
Is it?
Yeah.
No shit. Really?
A birthday.
Well, happy birthday, baby
it's
boy.
It's all in me.
Shoot.
Okay, so
you're big
what
boy
next?
Now.
Do you want to go to the questions?
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes our listeners write in questions. Hey, Doug and Brent, big fan of the podcast. What was the most trouble you got into when you were young boys? And I'm going to... Kurt is involved with this question, too. But I'm going to start it off with... One day we were throwing dirt. Dirt kludges, we called them. When I was like 5 years old. Maybe like... No, probably like 8 or 10. We were just throwing them at a house. We don't know why. But then the cops came somebody came, and my friend hid behind a tree, but the tree was about 3 inches in diameter.
Yep.
It was really funny. He thought he was hiding, but the tree was like...
The tree was that big,
thick as his
it's
wrist.
Like a cartoon. It was like a cartoon.
Yeah. That's the most trouble I got into ever since then. I never did anything bad.
He's been a good little boy. He's been a good birthday boy. He's been a good birthday boy ever since.
Burned clean.
In junior high, I was on the bus, school bus, and my friend brought a knife to school. And for some reason, I wanted to use the knife and just cut something with it. Not a
as knives
not
are
flesh
known
or
to
anything,
do.
But just, you know, see how it worked. And I cut the back of the bus seat because it had that kind of, that kind of cover to it, that rubber kind of, or whatever it was, I don't know, fake leather cover. And I just wanted to see what it felt like to cut it. I kind of cut a whole piece out, and somebody told on me. And I got suspended for a day from school.
Yeah, a little bit of dirt clawed, a little bit of knife. That was pretty much my problem from up until about maybe 12 years ago. I had an extended childhood. Yeah.
Oh, 12 years ago, you did something really
artificially
bad.
Prolonged. I believed that.
I'm still in my childhood.
Thorbjørn Velsen's theory of the leisure class was to be proved wrong. Now I'm like, I'm going to slack off like you have never seen consumption culture. I'm just going to, you know, enjoy the dripping ranch hose of human kindness. And that didn't
how
work
old are,
out.
How old
What's
are
a dripping
kids?
Ranch hose? Like a hose,
it's
I imagine
hose,
hose with ranch drenching coming
ranch
out of it.
Yeah,
that sounds delicious. You never said why you. Well, did you?
Here, let me run and use the restroom.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, well, I'll field some questions that are
field the questions.
Just there to the left.
He'll feel the questions.
Yeah,
he feel them, not field. Feel the questions.
Hello, Doug, Brent, and host. Since you are relatively well-known comedians, thank you. I imagine you must encounter. I'm not, but Brent is. I imagine you must encounter lots of weirdos after shows, out in public or just online. Have you ever had to deal with scary stalkerish type people? And if so, how did it go?
Backup question, what do you think of Rachel Dolezal's new name?
Wait, she has a new name?
I did not know she has a new name.
I mean, I'm always supporting Rachel Dolezal, whatever she is doing, so I'm sure I like it, you know? But I hope it's
I have to look this up now.
I hope it's not something I don't like. But, you know that did I ever mention
Whoa, wait a second.
Did I ever
here.
Mention that I've messaged her? I've tried to contact her a couple times.
Rachel Dolezal changes name. Wait a second here. She adopted the West African moniker. Her name is Nkechi Amara Diallo.
I support it. I support whatever she wants to do, you know.
We support it. As far as the first question goes,
I've shown,
there's weirdos after shows all the time, but they're usually, most of the time, they're cool, and I like weirdos. But sometimes, you know, people tell me too much information, and I need to, like, you know, get my thoughts together, and I can't really, I'm not good at, you know, when people kind of grip you? What do you call that? Energy gripper.
Compulsive disclosure.
Once
they got you, they can't stop the dump truck. They're like, oh my God, you're listening.
Yeah.
And it's not so much. Yeah, it's not so much that they're taking energy. It's how much energy it takes to not walk away, because you've just been so socially indoctrinated to be like, man, you're tripping. You're out of your mind. Like, seriously,
go back to Trifolonia.
I'm here in Coolsville to stay. Out.
You must get some real weirdos.
Intentionally. I mean, this is where...
Wait, intentionally? You're not...
I don't have
a song called Weirdos Talk to Me.
Well...
By the way, people don't feel self-conscious about talking to...
Yeah,
you know,
no,
Doug
no, don't,
or,
don't, don't.
Or
don't
me
at all.
After a show.
Like I said, I like talking to people after shows.
Just like, don't... Yeah,
just, I, there like, comes a point where...
Don't even be self-conscious about, like, oh my God, am I talking to...
But people, remember, like, you know, just because it's on your mind, and just because you can put it into words, doesn't mean it needs to be said. Sometimes, like, people talk because they're uncomfortable, and I think that was happening in my teens, so I just kind of stopped talking, or when I was talking, I would go onto these giant info logs, like, and now I will tell you everything there is to know about the recording of Trans-Europe Express, or, you know, Side 2, you know, Franz Schubert.
How do you learn about the recording of Trans-Europe Express? Is there a book?
Well, you know what Kling Klang Studio is? No. There's interviews with Kraftwerk from the 70s.
Are you at the library going through the Dewey Decimal System and going and looking up?
Absolutely. Well, by the 80s.
Finding interviews in Playboy and
by
stuff?
By the 80s, old Highlights
magazines.
I know. That's where I first learned about, you know, Autobahn. Highlights ad free for 40 years. Amen. Actually, Highlights is one of those amazing like commitments to doing the right thing, in my opinion. So
that's Aaron. That's Kurt. That's Brent.
Hi.
Good afternoon. That is. Oh, I guess if I whisper "good afternoon," you can still kind of hear me going "good afternoon."
I think it sounds better that way. It
sounds cool like that. Bye.
Bye-bye now. So, do you like the comedy of... Why am I... I can't... I, this is one of my favorite comedians, and I'm not... I'm blanking on his name for some reason. Fleischer is his last name. Voice of Roger Rabbit.
Oh, interesting.
Why am I not remembering... I reference him all the time. Why? I can't believe I can't remember. It's like when you can't remember someone you talk about a lot. Fleischer. Robert Fleischer.
The voice of Robert Rabbit. I don't know.
Roger.
I guess maybe by proximity I enjoy him.
You know, okay.
Charles
no,
Fleischer.
Charles Fleischer, yeah. Why?
Charles Fleischer. You know,
kind of remind me of him in some ways.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Hooray! A positive attribute. You remind me of, you know, that guy, not Genghis Khan, the one nobody liked. You know, kind of intimidating, but totally unqualified for...
Oh, Sam Khan?
Sam.
Sam Khan, not Genghis Khan, Sam
not
Khan.
Not Genghis, Sam.
Sam.
And the...
Jared Khan. Charles Fleischer. There's some similarities in the way you two express yourself.
Charles Fleischer. And
he's
what
good,
other...
Very good.
What besides...
Besides Roger Rabbit, he's a stand-up comedian and...
Yeah, I was a Lampoon. I was a Bill Murray.
Oh, okay.
I was a, you know, John Belushi. Mm-hmm. And honestly, you know.
And Bill Hicks.
And well, later Bill Hicks, okay. But when, you know, I mean, favorite movies, Young Frankenstein,
okay,
and then the other side. So you have that Mel Brooks finally letting go of the toilet humor a bit, though there's nothing wrong with The Producers. It's one of my favorite movies, except that when you really think about what, you know, great cinema and what we had learned about, to think that that was a pretty revolutionary film when it came out. Like, it has a layered message. It's layered like the movie The President's Analyst, you know.
I love that movie.
And
have you seen that movie? Mm.
Okay, so this is about pulling, you know, this isn't like Gil Scott-Heron. It's just like really pulling the camera back a bit to the point you're looking at what you're doing as yourself, but you're bearing witness. Like, you are totally outside of it, and you can't teach those states of consciousness, you know, because sometimes we just become so biologically, emotionally involved and invested in, and we're fighting and we're going to prove that we're right, that there's this, you know, 2, 3, 4, let me say 5 stories up, like, man, what you tripping on? Why, God, you're just wasting my time. We could be having like sexy complications. We could be having fun. I mean, natural fun, man. You're like getting all that. I'll show you who's right. I'll show you the right way to do it. And this is like literal, this is what people are arguing about. Like, you're really talking about which direction the toilet paper comes off the roll. I'm serious. They're like, well, there is a right way and there is a wrong way. I was like, yeah. But then you're 8 years old and the terrible twos have been done for like 5 years, man. Like, you can let it go. Or you can just do it and think it's the right way and be happy about it. Like, oh, I had to teach them the right way to put the toilet paper. Because that it's an argument that, you know, that this infantile brain, me, mine, my way is right. It's like, you realize most people work through that in a year or two. You get a little hug, uh-huh. Get a little snack. You go play with sticks in the woods. You make it doesn't matter. They're sticks. You can say it's anything. They're like, it's an abstract, you know, automotive factory. See in the leaves? Imaginary floating cars are coming out.
Every time I get into an argument like that, I want to say, you know, the earth is 1 billion years old.
This is like,
you know, that kind of thing where it's like, what are we talking
every
about?
Every time they get into it.
In the light of eternity,
like, this
does
mean,
what you say even matter?
Yeah, what are we arguing about?
You know, I just want to say, you must be sipping that trip juice.
That's like scissorp, man. When like, you know, scissorp. My God, that Doug, he's a real thinker.
Kirk,
he's a can-do maker.
People want to know, are you making new music?
I
know your band is playing. There's dates. You're doing shows.
So I started performing with the intention of playing some of the songs that never, you know, like when the second record came out in 1995, I had already left the East Coast. I had been in California and Colorado for the year. And it wasn't until...
Are you talking about a brief history of
Amazing
Letdown?
A mini album, but I guess that's an album too. But it's only, you know, it's a 10-inch. It's not technically an album, but yeah, we'll call it the... I can't even talk... we can't even agree amongst ourselves.
To answer.
Wikipedia... We have, like, give it 2 weeks... Someone who actually played, like, you know, bass would be like modifying the wiki page. Actually, no, Kurt,
oh, really?
You're wrong. You ate a half a pizza. We ate the other half, but then got the other pizza, which you ate another half of. That's why there was that many pizza boxes. Like, I forgot.
It is called A Brief History of Amazing Letdown.
Amazing Letdown.
So, there you go.
This is going to be a half pie.
Where did you record that record?
I was done in Philadelphia at Studio Red,
Adam Lassus.
So that was a different group than with the In the Presence of Nothing group.
Well, believe it or not, it was my friend Harold Evans, who was really a visionary collaborator, like very much responsible for why I kept on, like kind of like that addictive gambling, like it's so comfortable, like you feel like you're winning, but you're just giving the electronic poker machine every dollar, every moment, every ounce of your attention you have until it reaches that point where you're still playing, but you're out. There's no more money. And when trying to make a record like Exame the Photon Band, which is that combination of, for me, what felt like 100 years of information based upon how larger successful men and women and larger successful families have been operating and documenting those operations on Earth for the last few thousand years. I was feeling this is my foray into the Shakespearean sonnet. I'm going to try to make something that gives, you know, props to the ancestors, that is true and is, like Edward Gorey, dark, but it's not to not be funny, it's to actually give a name, give a chordal passage, give a melody to moments that could really be upsetting, really devastating. And even in those moments, to feel a connection knowing that, oh yeah, it's okay.
I asked you this before.
Despair
before
does
we
not
record
end you.
Before the podcast, but I thought it was interesting. Like Exame the Photon Band is how you pronounce it.
I stand with
it. I would always call it Exame.
Sure, and that
is that a real word?
It's not a real word. It's
you just made up that word.
Well, it's exactly when you put ecce, ecce.
What's ecce?
It's Latin for
exit.
Well, like no, ecce, like ecce, behold,
like God bless you, ecce,
like yeah, behold.
Oh, behold. Okay.
So, like yoga just means yoke. And the reason they say, oh, yoga, it's all yoga, means to like the ox takes on this wooden yoke to pull the cart. You are bearing existence. Like you'll take it on. Like, you're not going to run away. You're not going to cut corners. You're not going to say, like, I love you and you and you, not you, not looking, you know. And no, I mean, to actually say, like, oh, I love you. Okay, I see. This is the totality. This, what my mind is constructing and I'm taking as real. And this is why little kids learning to touch things outside of them look all like. We were talking about the baby. Not quite.
You think babies were born tripping?
Babies born sipping that trip juice.
Wait, okay. Get back to exam. Yeah. Ecce.
Exam.
Ecce is
semi.
Behold. Exam. So it's
semi. Exam. Semi. Sesame.
What is that?
To open.
Behold, open the photon.
Wait,
band.
Sesame means to open?
Open.
Open sesame.
Yeah.
And redundant.
I always heard that thing where people said, "Open sesame," like "sesame," like "sesame," sure. Like I say, "open." You know, sure. Sesame.
Well, I mean, this
is that from Popeye?
I don't know. I open just heard that. That's how that came out. You know, but sesame.
And you know, this is part of the. I 5 years ago really wanted to sit down with a lot of the co-creators of this work and. They're all in much different, more successful positions in life with a lot more to lose by actually talking about how they're like, you're not a bunch of drug addicts, but you actually were.
Wait. Sarsaparilla? Open Saskatchewan? Open septuagenarian? Open saddle soap? Open sesame?
He got it.
He finally got the
message. Okay, sorry. Sorry to cut you off. So the co-creators
no, no,
of that
no.
of that record,
they weren't drug addicts.
Well, you know that
there were drugs involved in that record,
and it's so funny. There was very, you know, because one of the things for me that this is going to be a really long conversation about what music as something that's existing all around us in this very pantonal, discordant, arrhythmical sort of way, but nature has a sound, you know, walking by a river, you know, walking through woods, listening, you know, there's so much to hear when, you know, animal songs, bird sounds, crickets, you know, all of these things that we, you know, we're constantly hearing and we're kind of, you know, genetically imbued with. There are certain smells and sounds that make us really comfortable. There are certain smells and sounds that make us really upset. And my
farts,
you know,
that's that. My sound sounds great, but not the smells, that's
actually, I think a lot of people like the smell of their own farts. That makes them feel comfortable.
I don't think most people would eat what they're eating if they didn't like it both ways. It's just like having sex and not thinking, I'm like, I don't like babies. Let's just go have some sex. It's like, I don't like the way food smells. Let's just go and eat this. You know, because like poop and food, and that relationship.
One and the same.
Well, practically. Okay. Don't go down that tangent. You don't want to compare children to poop.
No. They're both.
No, he's not comparing.
I'm not comparing it.
He's comparing food with poop and children with penises.
With sex.
There you go.
Okay. No, with procreate. Yeah, with procreation.
With penises and vaginas. Children with penises and vaginas.
I think we found yet another great place. We should just talk a lot and just edit all of this weird, nonsensical stuff that could be comedic, but we're going to have to develop it. And how about this? We'll come back and anything that's just like, man, that's just stupid.
No, we got to come back.
Okay.
We're going to get a part two. Because.
But no, I'm
we're
saying
we're going to have to circle back to my question.
I know we,
but we're going to have to circle back to the other question the Photon Band,
right.
And then where are the players of that record?
So
do you keep in touch with them?
And so the other half of the sort of feel of that record is the singing, some guitaring, drumming, vibraphone playing Harold Glee Evans, and he and I. You know, we met 30 years ago, and he not only, you know, he's a master musician, he is, you know, quite a philosophical foil for my sense of, you know, the divine play, and he has a great light against my darkness, and there, you know, I was always able to work a little bit better on recordings, having him going with his gut once I would beatbox something or just start playing. And if there was anything I was trying to communicate, like, you know, as far as making, you know, guitars, bass, singing work, I mean, he's a great songwriter. And
so is that how you do a lot of songs? You would beatbox it?
Well, I say beatbox, you know,
can you do an example of a beatbox?
Well, like,
and then he'd be like, oh, I got this. And then he would like put that together.
Yeah. And making.
But if it was Exime the Photon Band, it would be like.
Well, that was the third. That was the third time at the track. And I, because of having, sort of, you know, taken the blue pill. I had seen what the reality of my options were musically, and I just, you know, I just went and trusted in the Dharma. I'm like, man, though this isn't doing me any good, if I stop, I definitely know what's going to happen. So I guess I'll just keep going and, you know, keep working. And we, because of a deep shared love of Mark Hollis and those Talk records, Spirit of Eden, and the last one, Laughing Stock, you saw my gothic world apocalyptic side sort of turn a little bit more into like that sense of story, that sense of like off-world parable, like, you know, the turtle which died before knowing, and all of these songs about calibrated to focus on an infinite point, and it is like what is this, like, you're that's the darkest 4 a.m. record.
Do you think that I don't think that record sounds like anything I've ever heard before.
Thank you.
And
well, this is, and
but,
here's
but
the
you
thing.
Said talk it's kind of, is that what you said?
I of course said talk and Mark talk and Spirit of Eden, yeah, that's,
and
really
and Mark Allman.
Mark Hollis, the singer of Talk Talk. I mean the man is a savant, but Mark Allman is also a savant.
Mm-hmm. Let's listen to it a little bit. Not a lot of talk during this song.
Well, the two talks cancel each other out.
Oh, okay.
So it's just instrumental.
We're just going to listen to the full album. It's only 41 minutes.
Do you rap ever? I could see you rapping for some reason, you know?
You know, one of my favorite bands as a student was Nitzareb, and I don't know how to describe Nitzareb. It's not quite rap. It's not... It's...
I know Nitzareb.
It's industrial, I guess. But
my friend is married to the singer.
It was visually industrial. It was visually queercore, some sort of like political, like when they would come out in the director's pants or the, you know, the SS pants. But there was something, if you did a lyrical analysis, like when you realize the brilliance of performance art gone dance floor. And like who, like I don't want to say, I hear some really well respected critically described as, well, these are the heir apparents, and I think a lot of it is the energy in which the singers connect. I mean, a lot of people are on the emotional level, but they're not on the bard level. Listen to that. Now, that's 1 minute, 38 seconds. 99 seconds in.
Two and a half minutes in.
Oh. So that guitar sound you're listening to, when you listen to it for the entirety of the song, you'll hear what someone moving and performing, you know, with a guitar. I mean, this is really about the human factor. And the space you make this in is actually, the more silence you can get in between, the better it's going to be. And this is fifth album. They had already written the song that no doubt would go on to cover It's My Life.
Really, that's a cover. That's a Talk Talk cover.
Oh,
I'm learning a lot.
I love that a group of, you know, Orange County mighty, mighty Boston fans could somehow rear, you know, just like, you know what? Or the exact opposite direction. And they went and did It's My Life and Rock Steady. There you go.
Oh, of course I know this song.
there's no lack of content available, and since none of these artists are getting paid, we're allowed to just refer to it as content now, not art, not music, not our story. This is like, no, yes, your brand, bitch. You've been branded. Don't you? I bet you I can tell you the receipt number on your copy of Nirvana's Nevermind.
Let's wrap it up in the next 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But, so do you have, you put a new band together. Are you playing with Ariel?
Well, actually,
are
you playing with Ariel? You want to know what's interesting is, so last year, the Basic Flowers space, Nina and Max,
I know that I played there last week.
I know. What a great, what a great space, you know, really inspiring. Conan Moccasin and Shags and Ariel and I did some improvisational collaborative composition, much in the vein of The Way Snowflakes Fall, which is just about, except The Way Snowflakes Fall had people who weren't taking on music roles traditionally and just sort of given a part, like you are, I am your Spalding Gray, you are going to be the corpse, you are just going to hold this guitar and feedback like this. They're like, are you serious? And I was like, watch. And Shags and Conan are like absolute, just, you know, they have layers of different languages, encyclopedias to refer to. And with knowing what he wants, Ariel is just able to sort of set a tone. And, you know, I'm more of the, you know, the ox.
The tone setter.
I was more of the whatever seemed like the biggest piece to kind of keep moving. That was sort of my job. And with these Lily's performances in New York and then just recently out here, the musical director Don DeVore made the executive choice of finding other musicians that he had worked with or was working with to take on those Harold Evans recordings, because Harold, as a great writer, as a great singer, as a great instrumentalist and a drummer with a sound, like, not, oh yeah, he's good, but he actually has a sound. And this is at a time when people like Butch Vig and the pop punk producers were like, yes, you gate the snare drum to the tape machine, and it was just like, wow, and then I'll sound like you. Oh wow. Wow, man, I have never learned what not to do and how not to do it so fast. I was reading like how the Garbage record was made, like, yep, that's what it sounds like. They're like, don't you like the way Smashing Pumpkins record sounds? It's like, well, I know what it sounds like, and now that I know how they did it, I'm pretty much just like, there's my starting point. Someone starts moving any of the recognizable signifiers that's what they're going for, and I can either choose to A, say something, B, accept that this is going to have all the emotional quality of melancholy baby and the infinite sadness, or C, get up and be like, I want to say something, and I want to tell you how you're hurting people and you're totally just making it bad, but I'm going to go, bye.
That's why you got to get Steve Albini.
You know, he did a Jarvis Cocker record like 5-6 years ago that I really thought the first song, which has the hook, your life is just a carry-on bag. So I'm glad Jarvis, who I was late to the Pulp game. I didn't realize Pulp was Jarvis Cocker. I was so busy navel gazing, you know, studying my, how am I going to learn to play, you know, hurdy-gurdy. I gotta get this, you know.
You like that band Elbow?
Not familiar. Are they like Plume?
Marcus Garvey?
Marcus Garvey?
What are you talking about? Are you just making stuff up?
No.
No, wow, awesome.
I don't know. I just, I don't know. Some of the stuff you've kind of shared.
Is it, I'm guessing. I'm like you know, Henry Cowell, Harvey Cowell, Holy Cow, Henry Cowell. Man, Harvey Milk.
I like that. Yeah. Harvey Milk.
Harvey Milk.
So
what's your deepest? Okay, how about this? What's your favorite?
I want to keep talking about.
What's your deepest cut? You know, like what's your favorite? What's your favorite track that no one's heard of?
Deepest cut. Deepest cut.
You know, just in any music.
I think,
you know,
he played like a lot of them already. I mean,
maybe.
I would, my deepest cut for those that every, this is like an entrance exam. Like,
what's your
song.
What's your greatest hidden gem?
September by David Sylvian.
Oh, September, David Sylvian of Japan.
So much more.
Pull it up.
Let's pull it up.
Because, you know, in the.
Oh, that's an ad.
Awesome.
Do you ever so you worked with Damon Tatungjian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever keep up with him?
You know, in a psycholinguistics format sort of way, sure. You know, he's a language artist, and we don't speak directly, but we have connected, and we're a face-to-face relationship, and if I can go to a Swirly show, I'm there, you know, plugging in a Casio PT-10 into, like, their bass amp, like, just wait, they don't even know it's in there.
Yeah, so
continuing the art prank.
I think, you know, the Swirlies.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
That's all you gotta say.
The Swirlies.
Their guitars were so. The guitars of that band.
Forever.
I wish they were still making new guitar jams. There's no bands that have cool guitars anymore. Go listen to the
new Mew record.
Who's that? Oh, do they have one?
I think Mew were just playing on a new record. Maybe it was 2.5 years ago, but I'm telling you, I'm like an elephant pregnancy. My sense of, I'll get around to it. They're like, you said that in 2004. And I just shake my head and say, that whole thing gearing up for Iraq made me really mad.
Here's a...
Shines high above, the sounds of laughter. The birds swoop down upon.
It sounds like Anthony and the Johnsons a little bit.
We say that we're in love, or secretly wishing for rain.
Little interpretive dance.
I like this. This is what I was looking for, actually.
September's here again. September's here again.
That is a hook. That is a hook. That is the craft of the craft. Keeps me showing up, dealing with broken stuff, my own broken stuff. And you just, you know, you take on what's in front of you, and you just do your best. And that's, I mean, everyone's like, if I just had this and the X graph and the X and the Y, and if I just had, rather than just like, well, where are you at now? And I think that was my thing to learn, you know, at 33, like, well, where are you now? Yeah, man, life was different in 1990. You were like 19 years old, man. Like, come on. And I think the idea that we're actually undoing the expectations, like the weird dysfunctional self-description that sort of drives us to be like, yes, we can do it. And then it's like that billion years later. Why? Why is it so important? Is it just some arbitrary, like, I put a pin in it And then I started staring at it, and then I took the pin out, and there's nothing. There's nothing there. It's just like this little teeny tiny focus that I turned into a habit of thought, which I then turned into a self-description, which I then began to believe as real simply because I put a pin in it. And this is, you know, this is...
So what lesson can we learn? Don't put a pin in it?
Well, you know... Be careful to deal in absolutes. I am a insert. Because if your self-description isn't constantly, it's like, you know, now we're moving towards quantum computing where paradox can actually exist. If you can't, with all the information you have, make your best decision, you know, that it's the right action, and then with a whole new set of information, a whole new set of factors, say, oh my God, but in this case, the exact opposite is the, oh man, they talk about paradox. And when they say it's the exact opposite, but that's the right thing. Yes. But how can that be the right thing? Well, because at that time, that's what it was. And so, you know, trying to codify the act rather than how you arrive at that opportunity. And yeah, that's a really, you know, we're going to have real good luck with, you know, neural networks and experiential learning and, you know.
Do you have any insider info from
government
secret stuff?
Do you have any insider
from your dad?
You know, I think it's all off the shelf at this point. And I think they've been integrating for better part of 35 years, and they don't. The ones that started the interface in the 70s and 80s, the ones that were dealing with bulletin boards and mainframe time, and then moved into off the shelf hardware, outdoing their proprietary stuff, and that the scale issue of like, wow, this isn't a secret. This isn't a secret. It's literally a process, and people given the same information and the same materials to work with are coming up with better answers. And that's, you know, that's your, the evolution favors the selfish and deficient. And, you know, people, manufacturers, you know, that as part of their business model had a desire to make more money without having to do any more work. And that actually did drive like innovation. But how it's being integrated, how all of these, you know, supercomputers are making Skynet, just look at the people on your street, you know, look at, I mean, you don't have to do too much critical investigation into the Trump administration to, for me, some of the stuff is really arrogant and ignorant and kind of malicious, and I can just overlook it because the main thing is the sorrow and the sadness in which they have to then pull their chin ups, do this completely. I mean,
the melancholy.
If you play, if you play poker. And you know what fronting looks like. If you know that tell when someone has lost hope and there they are showing up doing their job. That's you know, people are angry that he says these things, they're doing these things, and I have to look at the source of that. I'm like, from a sense of sorrow. And yeah, maybe he is egotistical and entitled, but I'm telling you, you know, we're all doing time. You know, we are all doing time. And
what do you mean by that?
I mean, you don't have to be in jail to be in a prison. And
prison
he,
planet.
He acts like someone who is very unfree. And that the character of the presidency means turning his, I guess, his human experience off to prove himself right. And I think this whole, you know, this all came into the 100 days factor of what was going to happen when, you know, these shocking decisions of him fulfilling his
sloganeering, campaigning, promising to run to IKEA and buy a Skval and put up the Skval, and, you know, lots of trips to Home Depot and making lots of American jobs for China, and he's going to do it, and he's going to, and it doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't make any sense because he wants to be liked. And if you can't make a decision and have it be unpopular because you know it's, you know, well, in this case, 2 + 2 is going to equal 4.
Oh.
Not what I want it to. You know, this isn't the producers. We're not accountants. The actual, like, this is Earth. This is planet A, man. There is no off world. This is your home world. And down to the bacterial information that we have evolved with on this planet. I don't care what story your community tells itself inside of itself to explain away the mysteries of life. That's a community's job. And yeah, not all of them are well-intended. I'm going to say a lot of social survival constructs over the last 8,000 years have been manipulating the weaker, the you know, the poorer among thee. And though it is not fair, there goes back into that very frightening but, you know, international human trait, that desire to do less and get more, which does have its benefits in innovation. But when that is now, we're in the maintenance, we're in the service industry phase of innovation, you know. And I don't think we're being good stewards at this point. I think we're kind of letting the mess go under the rug. It's like, I just bought a Prius. Don't judge me. You know, I'm vacationing at a sustainable resort this year. And I'm like, buy all the green baubles you want. You are stimulating a economy, but is it the economy you truly want to participate over time? Because all of these changes, which will happen whether you think they should or not, we are going towards mechanization. We are going towards learning algorithms, decision-making algorithms. And I'm not talking about consciousness and robotics. And, you know, you want to talk to Kate Darling? Get her on this podcast. I bet she would knock your socks off talking about...
Who's that?
Kate Darling is she's a robotics ethics expert from the MIT Media Lab. And it's really one of those... We see things coming down the track for 20 years, and then someone goes on a life trajectory and meets a large group of people, but they're a little bit younger, and they become more specialized, and then they're on this track. And then you get these people who are just like seeing it for the first time, and it doesn't matter where their interest level lies. They're like, who the hell are you people, and what are you all doing here at the MIT Media Lab? Ah! It's just like, wow, you don't read much, do you? Like, no, but I've seen every season of American Idol. I actually had someone tell me that once. I thought that they're like, you know, I really like music. I have seen every season of American Idol. And once again, do I get like, oh, Mr. Snooty Van, I read Pitchfork and I know what Radiohead sounds like and you are not intelligent. Because why? I mean, you know, music is music. You know, those are your rituals. Would I listen to anything on American Idol? Of course not. You know, you don't see me down at the bus station, you know.
You got to check out Eccentric.
Eccentric?
Yeah, I'll show it to you later after this.
Thanks. Okay.
But play the Eccentric clip, you know.
What's Eccentric?
Eccentric.
Oh, is he one of those...
I called one 10 of the minutes, guys like 25 minutes ago.
One of the rejects? Is that one of the regions?
Yeah, he didn't move forward, but he's
cool.
He
Keith, Dr. Octagon.
He's my favorite, though.
You got to go soon?
Yeah.
So also, should we just end on the Panther guy?
Yeah, on Eccentric. You can go to his audition performance on American Idol, and it's very good, I think.
It is.
I think you would like it, actually. Okay. And also, I wanted to say that...
Part of it is just time. You know, I only have a certain amount of time to keep it between the ditches and...
But don't go out on it just yet. Hold on, pause it. I just wanted to say that I think, thinking about it more, I think I actually have heard that song September before.
Oh, beautiful. I told you, man.
Because
great minds.
Years ago, when I worked at a community radio station, I was exploring that stuff. Right. And I had come across it, and I, you refreshed my memory on that now, talking about it. Yeah.
And I'm glad that the Mark Isham, the Group 84, and, you know, that tour, that that's when I first was able to see Japan's David Sylvian.
Yeah.
I mean, that turned me around. Like, I was growing up in an environment of electronic music, like Skinny Puppy and people who were into that performance art. And then I was growing with a political, you know, message-based, philosophical DC hardcore, Rites of Spring, and the end of Minor Threat and the beginning of Fugazi. But he said, but there is this part of you that you got to look at. And I said, well, okay, I'm going to take Skinny Puppy and Rites of Spring, and I'm going to start this band that does David Sylvian. And, of course, My Bloody Valentine are basically the, like, okay, they do it better, but it doesn't mean I can't take my DC hardcore and my love of Satie and start jamming it through, you know, my Marshall stack, you know, feel my angst.
Well, whenever you start out doing comedy or music, you're always going to like emulate what
of course.
I've told a Billy Crystal joke here and there. I've mined the humor.
Play that eccentric track.
Believe that I'm right, guys. Really,
this is just right when he comes out.
Yeah. This is a very.
Wait a second. Did somebody just add that sound effect?
No, not the person in the video. The show added that sound effect, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Listen.
He's doing his audition here.
I've watched it and listened to this at least 100 times, and I'm not exaggerating. And I've found this guy, actually, and I got to know him a little bit.
Got to get him on the show.
It's a whole nother story. He's a Panther theme kind of guy. He's going to start singing.
He's crawling around the stage right now, but something would start soon, I hope.
He will eventually. They're going to ask him to start singing.
Wow.
Oh, eccentric. He says his name, eccentric.
Buffy, I'm not being rude. Can we just get on with the singing here?
What are you going to sing?
Swedish Princess by Eccentric.
Yeah.
He wrote this.
Give me a man. Cruising in my coupe, my mind is made up. I have to find a girl that can make my breath stop, who can make my walls rock, being sensitive on top. Like I said, my mind is made up. Why don't you come around so my heart can hear your sweet, sweet sunshine? Hey girl, I gotta confess, you are the sweetest princess. Hey girl, I gotta confess, you are the sweetest princess.
It's good, right?
It's good, yeah, he can
what
sing.
What the hell was that?
Okay, anyway, that's it for
the
now.
The build-up was horrific.
Oh wait! I need to sample this. And
I think he's a huge.
Let me hear his review.
The build-up.
The build-up was horrific. The outfit was horrific. The meowing was ridiculous, and the singing was horrendous.
They didn't get him, but I get him.
I get it. He's off the mark. He should have won.
I was
that.
Trying to manage him at one point. Actually, I thought
eccentric.
That
Kurt, are you leaving? Okay. Well, you're out of here?
I need to. I mean, you can carry on without me.
No. I gotta get going.
Eccentric. It took me a year to track him down, and I found him, and then I started to work with him a little bit. But
What did you do with him?
I had him on some shows and had him come up to San Francisco at one point. And
is he still doing it?
I don't know if he's very
active.
I want to get him on
Tua Crew, you know? Performance.
I actually tried to have him. We started to part ways at one point when he started hanging out with this producer guy who I actually was going to have him on Neil Hamburger's show. It was a paid spot.
They were asking for too much money.
He was asking for more money at a certain point. And then I just kind of thought, And then I don't know. Then he went ahead and did this industry showcase in Beverly Hills and paid $200 for tickets that he had to sell.
Anyway,
you know. But I'll talk about that.
Well, let's say goodbye, yeah. Kurt. Thank you so much for doing this. It was very enlightening conversation.
You guys are hilarious. You keep it. You keep it between the ditches, which is the best way to roll.
Cool.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, Brent has to go.
It's a Nardwar.
Thanks again, Kurt.
Until next time.
Cheers. Hey, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed that Poundcast. Do you have any questions for me and my hosts? Are there any guests you'd like to hear on the show? Well, send us an email at poundcastmail@gmail.com or chime in on the Poundcast page on Facebook. Also, buy a t-shirt at dougpound.bigcartel.com and click on the Amazon link at thepoundcast.com or feralaudio.com before you shop on Amazon. All right, see you later. Preach. Hey, you still listening? Let's listen to another Lily's song.
Hello, I'm Dave Ross.
Hey, and I'm Hampton Yunt.
And we host Suicide Buddies on Starburns Audio.
That's right. It's a podcast about suicide, but not to make light of it. We actually talk about suicidal thoughts, depression, kind of with a sense of levity that Dave and I have with each other. And he's my best friend. Come on.
Yeah, we're buddies. Suicide Buddies.
That's the title.
One of our favorite episodes that we've recorded so far is about this guy, Jan Pataki, who was a Polish aristocrat in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And he, one of the reasons it's possible that he killed himself is that he thought he was a werewolf.
Whoa.
Check out a clip. It also makes me think, like, we were talking about in the Norway black metal episode, how, like, just the culture of your surroundings can affect you. Like, yeah. He's in a castle in Poland. He's like, I mean, if you lived in a castle in Poland and no one knew anything about anything, you might be like, I'm a bat. I'm probably a bat.
That's like literally what happened to Batman. He literally is in his mansion. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I'm a bat.
I'm a
bat that helps people.
I'm a bat that helps people.
I'm a rich...
I don't know what you want from me. And my girlfriend, she's a cat. She's a cat.
My girlfriend's a cat.
She steals things. She's a woman who steals things. She's a cat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat.
I help people.
She's a cat. We fight a penguin.
My